Psalm 31 is a psalm that crops up a couple of times in the Bible. It gets quoted in a number of places. So Jonah, when he is praying to God, quotes verse 6, "I hate those who cling to worthless idols, I trust in the Lord." Jeremiah takes the theme of terror on every side that comes out in verse 13 and uses it several times in his writing. Here's just one. "Don't go out into the fields or walk on the roads, for the enemy is the sword, and there is terror on every side." He uses it a number of times. Psalm 71. The psalmist in Psalm 71, facing old age. And there, as he nears the end, as he looks back over his life, "You have been my hope, O sovereign Lord, my confidence since my youth. From my birth I've relied on you. Don't cast me away when I'm old. Don't forsake me when my strength is gone." He's reflecting back. But the opening three verses of Psalm 71 are reflecting back and really looking to Psalm 31. Jesus, of course, on the cross will quote 5. That's interesting, isn't it? Psalms, the corporate, the hymn book of God's peace, the songs that they sang together. When we sing the psalms, the hymns, the songs that we sing, they give voice to our thinking. That is true. They express what we think and feel. That is true. But more than that, they shape our thinking too. There is a sense in which you will become what you sing. So we need to be careful what we sing. We need to choose wisely what we sing. And we need to make sure that what we sing is filled with scripture, filled with truth. Because Jonah and Jeremiah and the psalmist of Psalm 71 and Jesus himself again and again speak the words that they had sung. There's a significance and importance to our corporate worship together in what we sing. Well, that's a kind of aside. This psalm is characterized by cries for help, like in verses 1 through 5 and 9 through 13, followed by a statement of trust, like in verses 6 through 8 and 14 through 8. Cry for help, expressions of problem, difficulty, trial, accompanied by statement of trust. And it comes up twice. At some point in the struggles that David is facing, he expresses his trust. But then more struggles come along, and he has to express the trust again. And that is our experience, isn't it? You know, you get over this thing. It's finally behind. There's something else waiting around the corner for you. Or sometimes even, maybe, there's an element of this. Sometimes in a particular struggle which goes on and on and on, you can come to a position of trusting God, and yet as it drags on again, you become cast down, you're struggling, and you need to almost go through that cycle of crying out again and faith and trust in. Verses 19 to 22 are an expression of praise, giving praise to God because he has heard and responded. Verses 23 and 24 are a call to the rest of God's people. Well, that's a kind of overview, I suppose, of a psalm. It begins, though, with this plea for help. "In you, O Lord, I've taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness. Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Free me from the trap that's set for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Redeem me, O Lord, the God of truth. I'll be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and knew the..." The plea for help here is based on who God is. "I've taken refuge in you, Lord. Deliver me in your righteousness. Redeem me, Lord, the God of truth, or faithful God. This is the importance of what we call theology, which is a bit of a dirty word to some people, I know, but it oughtn't to be, because theology means this: to know what God is like, to know what. And David here knows that is the basis on which he cries to him. You see, if you don't know what God is like, why would you cry to him? And what would you cry to him? And how could you cry to him? But if, like David, you know what God is like, a righteous God, you could ask him on that basis to deliver you. A faithful God, a God who is true, you could ask him on that basis to keep you, to rescue you, to a God who sees and who knows. A basis on which David crying to God. It's the basis on which we ought to cry to God. Your prayer will be directly connected to your knowledge of God. So the more we know of him, the more we can cry to him. The more truly we can cry to him. Don't think that theology is some kind of academic pursuit for people who like that kind of thing. It is so that you would know your God. That's what it is to be a Christian. Well, what is he like? What is David asking him to be? To be a rock of refuge, a strong fortress. Since you are my rock and my... Yesterday afternoon, the boys and I went up to Goodrich. Well, there's Goodrich Castle. It's on a bend in the Wye, a little sandstone outcrop. The sort of ridge runs up there. It is quite literally a rock and a fortress. That wonderful kind of red, old red sandstone, and it's all kind of weathered and so on, and then plonked on top of it, you've got this. Picture it there, and that's what God is like to David. A solid place. A place of security. Keep me from the trap that's set for me. Rather, hide me in your refuge. That's what David is crying that God would do for him. And then verses 6 through 8, this declaration of trust. I trust in the Lord. I'll be glad and rejoice in your love. All the struggles, all the things that David has been crying out for, the rescue he's wanted. I will be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction. You knew the anguish of my soul. The idea of hands comes up a number of times in this into your hands, David says, I commit my soul. You've not handed me over to the enemy. Later on, we'll have the statement that keep me from the hands of my enemies, but my times, my days are in your hands. It's almost like there's a contrast being set up between these two pairs of hands. Those who want to harm David. And the safe hands of God. The hands he finds himself in. Alika Motu in his commentary says this: the hand of God is not the place where we are immune from life's. It is the place where they happen to us. Our security is not from trouble, but in trouble. The hand of God is not the place where we are immune from life's troubles. It is the place where they happen to us. Our security is not from trouble, but in trouble. And he quotes John 10. John 10, 28 and 29. I read it to you. I'll read from verse 27. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. He followed him. I give them eternal life, and they can never perish. The security of his. They can never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. Jesus Christ, the good shepherd, the sheep can't be snatched away from him. But then, Jesus adds this to it, as if being in the hands of the shepherd weren't enough. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and my, the Father are one. Here are the sheep that belong to this shepherd. The Father. No one can pluck them. Now, the fact that somebody wants to pluck them implies trouble, implies distress. There's a tussle, isn't there? There's struggle. But do you see the security they have there? Our security is not from trouble, but in trouble, says Matthew. Well, David knows what it is to be in this distress, in this trial, but to reach this place of trust. I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and knew the anguish of my soul. You've not handed me over to the enemy, but have set my feet in a spacious place. And then we come back to the beginning of the cycle, this cry for help, beginning in verse 9. And the next few verses are much more, there's a lot more detail, I suppose. There's a lot more graphic description of the struggle he is going through. Be merciful to me, O Lord, for I am in my eyes grow weak, my soul and my body with grief. My life is consumed by anguish and my years by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction and my bones grow weak. Because of all my enemies, I am the utter contempt of my neighbors. I'm a dread to my friends. Those who see me on the street flee from me. I'm forgotten by them as though I were dead. I become like broken pottery. Like yesterday. David is spent. He is just drained by the whole experience. The distress. Eyes weak with sorrow. Whole soul and body with grief. And the gloom that it kind of casts over him. My life consumed by anguish. My years by groaning. The isolation it's brought on him. How his neighbors, his friends are avoiding him. Now he feels forgotten by them, left alone. And friends, even the best of friends, they do fail us, don't they? We do find they're not there when we need them to be there. David feels the terror. That unshakable conviction that just things are going wrong. Bad things are coming. Just cry for help. You can feel the groan, you feel the pain in his experience. As you pray to God, it doesn't need to be neat, buttoned up. Honest with God here, isn't he? He's not afraid to express himself. He doesn't need to kind of put on a face. What are we to do with verses 17 to 18? To a certain extent, verse 6. Don't let me be put to shame, O Lord, for I have cried out to you, but let the wicked be put to shame and lay silent in the grave. Let their lying lips be silenced, for with pride and contempt they speak arrogantly against the righteous. Well, what are we to do with that? You know, when gods are suffering under the hand of oppressors, it is right to pray against those who would oppress. It is right to pray against ISIS and their assault on God's people. It is right to pray against the government of North Korea and its ongoing campaign against them. David is not trying to get revenge, and the Psalms never condone that we would seek revenge. But there is here a prayer for vengeance, and there is a difference between the two. You see, in revenge, I'm out to get my own way. I'm out to straighten things out. In vengeance, we are praying that God would bring justice. That God would act justly to overthrow persecutors. But notice this, we are not only to pray against, we're also to pray for them. So, I think what David prays is consistent with, for instance, Leviticus 19 that says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people. It goes on to say, love your neighbour as yourself, I am Lord. And you can think of David there when he's in the on the run from Saul and the opportunity to come up to kill Saul. And he won't. I won't raise my hand against the anointed. He won't take revenge. Elsewhere God says, vengeance is mine, it's mine to repay. So we're not only to pray against the enemies of God's people, we're to pray for them. Remember Jesus saying this, I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And of course, where does that principle find its fruition? Where do you see that most clearly? Well, surely you see it on the cross, where Jesus, in the agony of the cross, prays, Father, forgive them. And with this psalm, as with so many of the psalms, we haven't fully grasped the psalm until we've heard Jesus singing it. It's Jesus who literally sings verse 5, isn't it? Into your hands I commit my spirit. Those are the words he takes on the cross. But who like Jesus can sing verse 9? I am in, be merciful to me, O Lord, I am in distress, my eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and my body with grief. Think of his agonies in the Garden of Gethsemane. Because of all my enemies, I'm the utter contempt of my neighbours, I'm a dread to my friends, those who see me on the street flee from me. Who like Jesus, cursed by his enemies and deserted by his friends? And yet, who like Jesus trusts to God in the midst of his suffering? Into your hands I commit my... They're very calm words. It's not the kind of words that somebody might say as they slip off to sleep. But that's not the context at all, is it? It's a soul in anguish. And yet expressed in this deep trust in God. With so many... Remember, Jesus sang these psalms. Just as so many of the hymns you know. And can it be? And you in your head have just finished the rest of the... Amazing grace. And the words just go there, don't they? Well, the songs that Jesus sang, he didn't sing Wesley or Newton. He sang psalms. And they were cemented in his thinking. But we've not understood the psalms until we've heard Jesus singing them. To kind of get that as we approach this. Verse 19 through to 22 is another expression of trust. The answer to prayer. How great is your goodness you've stored up for those feet. What praise now the psalmist is bringing to God. Last two verses. The psalmist, from speaking to God and addressing God, now stops and turns to the congregation. Love the Lord, all his saints. The Lord preserves the faithful, but the proud he pays back in heart. Be strong and take heart, all you who hope in the Lord. That's David's last word on the matter. That's what he's saying to you. He closes by addressing the people. You see, he's had this individual struggle, that's true. But individual struggles for the Christian result in corporate praise. We're not believers on our own. It is important that we see the life of the body together. We're told to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. And when one of us goes through difficulty and trial and suffering, well, yes, the rest of us are to walk with them through that and strengthen them and support them and pray for them in it. But when we see that brother, that sister being kept through their suffering and their trial, it is a huge encouragement to the rest of us. Because I say, I know that when I go that way, I can expect the same God to do the same thing for me. And when you come to the end of that trial, or in the midst of that trial, you can sit down and you can say to somebody else, let me tell you, this is what God has done for me in there. Let me tell you how he has kept me through this. Let me tell you how he has been faithful to me. How he's delivered me in this. We have to share those stories with each other. You know some people, and they're quite quick to moan, aren't they? There's always something wrong. And they're always ready to tell you about it. We're to be quick to return thanks to God and to share it with his people so that they would be encouraged. The Lord preserves the faithful. The Lord preserves those who are true to him. That's the encouragement that David is handing to you. Here's the encouragement. Your trials are going to come. I know you've had some. I know you feel you're in some right now. There's still to come. See, that's not very encouraging, that. No, it is. Because here's what David says, be strong and take heart, all you who the Lord preserve the faithful. He will keep you. Well, like David, we should be encouraging God's people by reminding that. We should be returning praise to God for it. And we should be not afraid to cry to Him for help.